Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Straight from the Source, streaming to you from the Heritage Radio Network studio in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York. My name is Clay Gordon, and in the 20 years that I've been exploring my chocolate life, I've visited cacao farms from Bolivia to Belize and beyond. I've spent time with farmers and cocoa merchants and some of the world's best chocolate makers and confectioners. Straight from the Source is inspired by the people I've met and what they've taught me. Today, my guest is Sean Eskenazi. Sean, welcome.
Thank you, Clay.
Hey, you know, I'm thinking about that last line, you know, straight from the source is inspired by the people I've met. And you and I go back, you know, quite a ways to, you know, a really interesting place, which is the Amazon rainforest of Ecuador. We met there in 2005 at the very beginning of your journey.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. You know, I remember we connected, I think it was, in the Miami airport.
That's right.
On our way to Ecuador. That's right, isn't it?
You know, yeah, we did. We ran into each other sort of accidentally. We were both flying down for this trip, and I was sitting in the gate, and you walked over and said, "Are you Clay Gordon?" And we had been corresponding via email for a little bit while. I think I helped encourage you and tipped you over to actually making the decision to go down to Ecuador.
Well, to go down to Ecuador and to get into this business. Mm-hmm. So for better or worse, I have you to thank. Or blame.
Well, you know, and in thinking about the journey and thinking about the whole issue of how do we produce cocoa or how do we produce chocolate and cacao and how do we make it in a way that is going to do justice and bring justice to the people who actually grow the cocoa beans. I mean, there's a lot of talk about sustainability. There's a lot of talk about ethical production, you know, but in looking at you and what you've done in the last 8 years and the commitment that you've had to your communities, you know, for a small company, you're incredibly engaged and doing as much, I think, as almost anybody is in the world in improving the livelihoods of the farmers that you're working with.
Well, thank you for saying that, Clay. I really appreciate it because one of the messages that we want to get out, you know, besides the fact that we have good tasting chocolate, is that small businesses have a role to play in the improvement of communities that they do business in. So in my own community here in Springfield, Missouri, I think I've got a responsibility, regardless of the size of my company, to get involved, to do things in my community. And I do business in communities in, like you mentioned, in other parts of the world, in Honduras, Ecuador, Tanzania, and the Philippines. So I think it's my responsibility to be involved in community development there as well. And so even though now we've got 14 full-time employees, we still find a way to be involved in those communities.
You're right. And, you know, locally, you're involved with a high school. You're involved in is it a homeless shelter? Bringing people in, you know, and, you know, you've got this program where you take high school students over to Tanzania and do this project called Chocolate University. I mean, you're finding lots of really interesting and creative ways to get involved and stay involved.
Well, thank you. The program where our factory is in a part of town that's undergoing rehabilitation, and there's a lot of social services on our street, and Springfield's largest homeless shelter is a block away. And so the inspiration for Chocolate University was the fact that there's 80 kids a night in that homeless shelter. Hasn't changed in the last 8 or 9 years. And so they feed into neighborhood schools. And we thought in the very beginning, let's involve those kids not just those kids, but the kids of the neighborhood in our business, expose them to our business model. And so we have, like you said, the elementary school program, the middle school program, and the high school program. And really, because of Drury University, college students, and Drury is just a few blocks away, too. So we find ways to involve those kids in one form or another in what we're doing and our business. And we fund that through tours of our chocolate factory, and have since the very beginning. We have a Chocolate University account at our local community foundation, and so we put that money there, and then we use it in the neighborhood and for other projects like taking kids to Tanzania.
Well, and the actual decision to source beans from Tanzania was actually involved the local high school. Is that correct?
That is right. The students, the first group of students that I took, their assignment was to pick a country in Africa. And so since we were going to take students, it sort of narrowed down the list of countries that we could go to safely, and then countries that I had some contacts with. But, yeah, they're the ones who picked Tanzania. And they picked a farmer group led by a woman, and that was very important to me, and that was also a teaching opportunity for the students about why we should empower women entrepreneurs in developing countries, and frankly developed countries for that matter, and so they did. And there's one farmer group, and still one farmer group led by a woman in Tanzania, so that's the one we picked.
Right, and the students have been at least once, or is it an annual trip now?
They've been twice.
Okay.
And we are, it's looking like it's going to be every other year. That's the way we've done it so far. And half of the students are private pay. They're local Springfield High School students, juniors in high school. And the other half I raise the money for. And so it takes me a while to raise that money and run a business at the same time. And so the way we do that is find people who share my passion, and we have customers and donors out there who believe with me that exposing young people to the developing world in short trips can change their lives, and ultimately, if we pick the right students, can really impact the future of their communities and of our country. So that we have a very rigorous application process, and the students write essays and go through interview process, and we've picked some great students, and it's really been gratifying for me, and the gratification is almost kind of, I think, catapulted over the years because of this critical mass that we have of students that we've taken. The first group, one young lady, graduated from high school and took a gap year and moved back to Tanzania to that village. And this year, two students, these are high school students, two young ladies came back and they started their own foundation. These are 17-year-old girls. Called the Kiela Student Foundation, to raise money for student fees for students that go to school where we buy our cocoa beans.
And, you know, that's the impact here in the United States, but the impact in Tanzania is, you know, also, you know, profound. It's not just a matter of providing a market for the agricultural commodity, but you're going back and doing things like building wells and providing books for students and other kinds of resources that enrich the community.
That's right. We started with the water well, and as most of your listeners, I'm sure, will know that clean water in Africa is a real problem, and it was for this village, Tenende, in southwestern remote Tanzania, and they had to walk for hours for clean water, and sometimes it wasn't even clean. So we raised the money on our first trip to drill a well, and I thought that it was important that the students understand we weren't just going to be business tourists. We were going to do something, and so we did that on that trip. And then the second trip, in between the first and second, we raised money for books. This is a high school right next to the village, 1,100 kids, 10 teachers, no books, and no electricity. So we came back and we raised money for $10,000 worth of textbooks for them. We delivered them to them. We bought them in Tanzania. And then when we went there a few months ago, we actually brought and raised the money for six laptops, projectors, a generator to wire the school, and we installed the Khan Academy on each laptop, which is a video learning system, free, 3,000 video lessons on each laptop, taught them how to use them. And the thing is, this whole project is done in partnership with the PTA of the school and with the principal of the school. This isn't something that we just dreamed up and said, we're going to come and do this. We did it because they wanted it and because they said it would help them. And so our kids actually helped install all of that this summer when we were there. And it was gratifying for them to do it. And now these kids have an opportunity with 10 teachers and 1,100 kids to actually graduate and go on to higher education. And they didn't have that opportunity before.
Well, I think there are two really important components in what you just said. The first one of which is that you didn't go in there saying, this is what we think you need. You listened to and responded to the community, and the community said, okay, you know, this is what it is that we need from you. And I think the other thing is that when you think about conventional fair trade, right, is that many of the kinds of things that you're doing would not be recognized as being appropriate in the fair trade certification world. But yet you're delivering, it seems to me, an enormous amount of value that should be recognized. And it seems a shame that fair trade as it is institutionally recognized doesn't see the value of what it is that you're doing.
I think that that fair trade is a great concept and has done great work, and in many ways it's become a victim of its own good work and good marketing, and they have become so institutionalized that for the smaller people like myself and the farmers that I work with, there doesn't seem to be really a place for us to fit, and I wish that there was a place for us, because I think that it would benefit the farmers and it would benefit our business and people who are the same size as we are to have that kind of connection. But it's not going to happen in the fair trade system as we know it. And you know, the thing about it is, it's okay. These things generally have a way of working themselves out, and I think that there will come a point where there will be other certifying bodies that are willing to take the time and look at these kind of things and look and judge the impact that people are having. And I would say if you would have asked me 3 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago, and people did ask this question, they'd say, wow, you're sharing profits with farmers on the cocoa beans that you buy, and then you sell the bars, and you actually open your books to them, and you give them money. I bet you're just changing their lives. And the honest answer to that question was, no, we aren't. I mean, we're small. This profit share is not huge. It's not life-altering. It's good, but it's not something that's going to cause them to, be able to quit their job and buy a second home. But the thing is, as we've progressed and worked on these other community projects, I can honestly say that now we have actually changed their lives in small ways, really, but we have. And it's the truth. And we can demonstrate it. And that is something that I'm proud of. Mm-hmm. And is gratifying, and in fact, we can even measure it. In the Philippines, we sell this Tablia product from the PTA that we work with there.
It's another example of thinking outside the box and say, what can we do that's meaningful, that's engaging, and that people can have a direct sort of emotional connection with, which I think is one of the things that's a strength of what it is that you're doing.
Well, if you'll, the thing is, Clay, and I remember very specifically, I have traveled with you, I have been with you in origin countries, and one of the things that really struck me years ago, and a lot of people may not even recognize something like this, but I saw the way you listened to people that we were learning from. That is, the farmers who were talking about what it is that they needed and how they wanted things. And I learned from that, from watching the way you listened to them and then tried to come up with responsive solutions instead of solutions that were created by us and then forced in some ways on them. That's the first thing. But the second thing, and this has been critical to my business, and frankly, you were the inspiration for this, in a sense, because if you'll notice, my business is not about charity. It's not, that business model is fine, but I don't say for, you know, every bar you buy, I'm going to give away this, or for, you know, 10% of my gross revenues, I'll do that. That's not what we do. What we want to do is build something that's sustainable and that's related to the problem so that the people who are actually impacted by it are working on it themselves in partnership with us. And so it's not a charity. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with that model. I have respect for that model. That's not the way we choose to do the work that we do. And I think in large part, I remember the discussions that we had about the pros and cons of that kind of model, and I know where you stand on that, or at least where you did.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. No, absolutely. I think that you know, in traveling around in Origin, one of the things that I see is that people who just give money, who don't actually ask anything substantive of the people with whom they're working, you can just see the littered remains of equipment and buildings and lives around the countryside, and so engaging them. Before we go to break, though, tell me a little bit more about, you know, how the Tablea project works, because, you know, the impact, you know, in the community in the Philippines is really quite dramatic.
The Tablea came about. The Tablea is a traditional hot chocolate drink made in the Philippines in a very very traditional Central and South American drink, just ground up cocoa beans into discs. And I asked the PTA and the school there where we buy our beans, Malagos Elementary School, what they needed. A number of the kids were malnourished. And so we had a relationship with the school, and I asked the PTA if they could make Tablea for me, put it on my container, and I would buy it from them for $1 a unit. And then I would sell it for 10 and use the $9 to return back to the PTA for them to buy and prepare meals for the kids with. And so, well, that's exactly what we've done. This is our second season to do that. And the first one was very successful, such that the teachers have reported statistically that since the feeding program started in June, 90% of all of the kids have gained weight. So we don't just use this money to have a lunch program for the kids who are technically malnourished, but this program feeds the entire school of 700 elementary kids lunch every day they're in school. And all we had to do was sell 800 units of Tablea. This year we'll need to sell 2,000 because we're sourcing the food locally to support the local economy. And the rice program in Tanzania operates in much the same way. But the idea is for the PTAs to make a product, I buy it from them, I sell it to my customers here in the United States, and all of the profit goes back to the PTA to feed the kids.
Wow. It's quite remarkable. I'm thinking about how something as simple we think about as chocolate can have an interesting and profound effect on the lives of people halfway across the world. Hey, Sean, stay with me. We're going to take a short break, and after we come back, we're going to talk about some other things that you've got going on that I think people will also find extremely interesting.
All right.
You're listening to Ancestors by Peels on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Clay Gordon, creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. Today, my guest is Sean Askenozy, founder of Askenozy Chocolate. And before we went to break, we were talking about a program called Tablea. which is helping buy lunches for a school in the Philippines. But Sean, one of the newer and more interesting things, which it sort of expands the range, if you want, of collaboration with the people that you work with, is in fact this line of chocolates called Collaboration. And you know, I love puns. I know that you and I talked, and you know, I think that I'm the source of the chocolat number, which is on the still on the bars. Which is a lot of fun. So you know, I love puns. It's one of the reasons why I like the craft beer world. They have a lot of fun with names. So where did the inspiration for the Collaboration project come from?
Well, the thing is, we love working with people that are our friends. And over the years, we've developed a lot of close relationships with people who are in the food world, and in many cases, they're customers. And so, for instance, the Licorice Bar, our licorice supplier is in Sweden, and you know our friend Martin, who has a licorice company there. And so he was a customer of ours buying our chocolate in Sweden. It made sense to collaborate with him on a bar.
But there's a deeper connection than that, because Martin was on that trip to Ecuador in 2005, which has made the connection. And then he was your original distributor in Scandinavia. Is that correct?
That is absolutely right. And so you and I met Martin at the same time. Almost 8 years ago. And so that was these relationships develop, and it's fun to work on a project with someone that you respect. And for instance, Zingerman's was one of the first people that we ever worked. We didn't call it a collaboration bar at that time, but Zingerman's and Ari at Zingerman's was one of the first people that talked to us about a bar, and that was several years ago. And so these kind of projects take a lot of time. For instance, the Intelligentsia Coffee Project, they had been a customer for a long time of ours before working on this collaboration bar. That one took almost a year. And we're working on one right now that we're going to release in 2 weeks that has taken us 2 years. And it's with a chef in Santa Fe, New Mexico, a James Beard award-winning restaurant there. And, you know, the thing is, and you can understand this, Clay, and I'm sure your listeners can, that the food artisans and folks that we work with, these are people who are really respected in their industry, and they are very particular. And so working with them is, on the one hand, a challenge, but it's also really rewarding, because I mean, when you work on something for that long so that we both love it, then we think it's going to produce a really great result for the people who like that kind of thing.
Yes, and even though it's not a chocolate bar, I understand you've also been providing some nibs and some cocoa powder and some other things to some breweries around the country as well.
We have. The only brewery that we supply to is Dogfish Head Brewery in Delaware, and they have been a customer of ours for almost 4 or 5 years, and they make an ale called Theobroma. And Sam Caligione is the founder and CEO at Dogfish, and is someone that I have respected for a long, long time, and read his business book, Brewing Up a Business, when I was still practicing law and trying to think about what I was going to do, and had the opportunity to present with him at the Great American Beer Festival several years ago, and the relationship went on from there, and he's someone that I talk to, you know, via email or somehow, you know, every few weeks. And so, yeah, they are a big customer, and they are probably one of our biggest customers. And then, interestingly enough, another one of our biggest customers, in fact, our number one customer in the world, is Gethsemane Abbey in Kentucky, a Trappist monastery. And they buy our chocolate. We make a special blend for them to make their fudge with, and that's how they support the monastery. So it's interesting. Number one customer is a monastery, and number two is a brewery. And you know, those aren't, if you went back to Europe, those would sometimes be the same thing.
Absolutely. So, I mean, if you were to look at, you know, Sixtus, who's the brewer of West Vlaeteren, which is considered to be one of the best beers in the world, a Trappist mm-hmm. monastery. And yeah. You know, I love the names on the collaboration bars, or not necessarily the names, but you know, the text that's on the front of it. The bar that you're doing in collaboration with Zingerman's, It has on the front of it, "The Breathless Mexican Sun, Vanilla Pods, X-Wing, and Crisp Chocolate Depths Sings El Rustico." You know, "Dark chocolate on my tongue, mingling with a sweet, velvety licorice. Milk, malted milk, dark chocolate dripping down my wrist, lick, lick." You guys must... You
know, Jenny, yeah, Jenny wrote that.
But, you know,
she did.
I have long said, if you're not having fun with chocolate, you're doing wrong. You're doing it wrong. I mean, you know...
That's so true.
You know, so, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about the chocolate community is, for the most part, you know, people are really happy. You need to be a really miserable person to be miserable around chocolate. And for the most part, that's not the case. People are really happy with what it is that they're doing and enjoying it tremendously.
I think that's true, and I think it's true even in the midst of the economy that we've been through and that we're in right now, and it works both ways. So what I mean by that is, you're right, the people who work with it are happy, and I think it's an opportunity for us as chocolate makers to provide, you know, a small modicum of pleasure and happiness to the people who want to, you know, buy our chocolate bars and share it with other people. And it's not something that's hugely expensive. And you know, when you're buying what some would say is the best of something in the world, I'm not saying our chocolate is, but it's when you can buy that for $8 or $10, you're in a rare category, because you can't buy the best of almost anything for $8 or $10. And so it is an affordable luxury, as people have said. And it provides some happiness and pleasure for those people who both make it and consume it.
No, it is so true that chocolate is among the most affordable gourmet foods. And you know, and it's true. If you look at it, you know, the Queen, you know, with all her money, the Queen of England with all her money, can't buy better chocolate than I can. You know, mm-hmm. I can walk into any store that specializes in chocolate, a specialty store, you know, put down a $20 bill. Pretty much, and walk away with what many consider to be among the best chocolate in the world. And you can't do that with any other food. And it does, you know, bring you pleasure. We have an opportunity just before Valentine's Day. We'll be talking with Nat Bletter of Madre Chocolate, who's an ethnobotanist. And one of the things that we'll be talking about is sort of the neurochemistry and the neurobiology. So what are some of the chemical ingredients in chocolate that promote happiness and pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
What? So, you know, in looking back at this, I mean, you know, yes, we met in October of 2005 in Ecuador. I think it was in March or April of 2006 that I went with you to Mexico, and then thereafter went immediately to Venezuela. And, you know, just fascinated by the differences in culture. My guess is that this is not, you know, where you are right now is where your business plan said you would be back in 2006. But apart from the work that you're doing in country, in helping people, and the pleasure that you're bringing to people, you know, in your factory, the people who are your customers, the people that you're sourcing from, you know, what is the real spark right now that says, okay, here's where I'm going to go for the next 5 years?
The spark that where we're going to go for the next 5 years, I would circle back to the thing we were talking about a moment ago with Gethsemane Abbey. And there's something that the monasteries around the world have used to govern themselves called the rule, or the rule of Benedict, for the last 1,500 years. And I've been reading lately about the application of that to a modern business as opposed to a modern monastery. And there's a word that I think would describe where I think we would like to be over the next 5 years, and the word is sufficiency. So I'm not looking to scale up, as they say, and, you know, I'm not looking to get to 500 metric tons of chocolate a year. That's not, I'm not looking at that. What I'm looking at is sufficiency. When is enough enough? And that we can maintain our quality standards. We're making great chocolate. We're making an impact that we can with the people that we have. We're working with kids, continuing to do that. But yet, at the end of the day, we have to be a profitable business. If we're not profitable, then we can't do those things that we're doing to impact the world. And by profitable, then, we have to ask ourselves, how much is enough? And how do we control the growth? Not just every single opportunity that comes in our path, but how do we control the growth in a way that we will reach a level of sufficiency and contentedness? And so that's what I'm looking at. And I want to find that sort of balance of sufficiency. You know, you mentioned a moment ago about the Abbey in Europe, and they don't make as much beer as they possibly can. They make enough beer to support the monastery, and that's it. And it's the same way at Gethsemane, it's the same way at Assumption, it's the same way at these other abbeys. They make enough to support their community. And so what I want to do in the next 5 years is make enough to support my, quote, community. That is the people that the families that make up the business Askenossi Chocolate. So that's my hope for the future.
You know, Sean, I think that's a fabulous way to frame a lot of the issues that many of the hosts here on Heritage Radio Network do talk about as they struggle with creating their businesses, as they struggle with growing their businesses and thinking about what it is they want to achieve and the changes that they want to make in the world. It's a fabulous way, I think, to end the interview today, and I want to thank you for being my guest today. Before we go, what I want to say is that I encourage listeners to go to askenossi.com. That's A-S-K-I-N-O-S-I-E, askenossi.com. For 1 week only, ending midnight Central Time on Wednesday, the 23rd of January, there's a special 15% discount offer to Heritage Radio Network members and listeners of the program on purchase of collaboration products. So 15% off collaboration products. The set, if you buy two, I understand you get to the level where shipping is free. And while you're there, I would also encourage people to take a look at the Tableya Bar as well as the Kiela Rice because of the support that they do to their communities in both the Philippines for the Tableya and the Kiela Rice for Tanzania. Hey, Sean, I hope to come back to you 5 years from now, find out how contented and how sufficient you are. And, you know, I really do want to thank you. You've been a great friend for the last 8 years. It's been fabulous working with you and seeing you grow and seeing you come into your own, and to know that, you know, I had even a small part in helping you reach where you are and be able to have the effect that you've had in the world of chocolate has been just really quite satisfying to me. So I want to thank you today for being my guest.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your encouragement and friendship.
And I look forward to hearing 2 weeks from now, okay, what the new collaboration is and letting everybody know what that is. And so thank you. That's it for today's show. I want to thank Jack and Austin for engineering today's show and thank the rest of the Heritage USA, Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network team for their hard work building, maintaining, and growing Heritage Radio Network. Straight from the Source comes to you every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. And before we go to the outro, the coupon code at askenossi.com to get the discount is Heritage, capital H, Heritage. So thanks, everybody. Straight from the Source comes to you every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or go to heritageradionetwork.org. If you're not already a member of HRN, please join me and show your support for this show and the network. If you have any questions you'd like to hear answered on future programs, call 718-497-2128, email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org, or contact me through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.